Well, Dan, there is a great deal to discuss with our next guest. And for a conservative, and she is a conservative, and she is okay with pot.
Yeah, we'll
that surprised me. Did it surprise you?
Well, yes and no. We'll get into that. A lot of things to talk about. She's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. She's going to spend an hour with us. She's very kind to do this because the legislature convenes the new session in 3 weeks. She is the 34th District State Representative, Melissa Gibran. Representative, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
We should also let our audience know, Brad, the 34th District includes East Haddam, East Hampton, and a part of Colchester. Representative, let's start with what the governor did yesterday, vetoing the Medicare savings plan. The legislature, in special session, passed it in overwhelming numbers to repair the deficit that was caused when the original budget was passed. What's your take on the veto by the governor?
You know, I really don't, frankly, understand where he's coming from. You know, I understand he doesn't want to do the amendments in the budget the way we've set out. Clearly, he didn't do that the first time. But, you know, we're trying to give seniors peace of mind in a very important program. And how he can just feel that he cannot implement the law. I was listening to Senator Fasano's comments a couple of days ago, and he's absolutely correct.
State Representative Melissa Gibran, our special guest. You know, I have to be honest with you, what surprised me, because you are a conservative, you're a Republican, and I was very surprised that you supported marijuana. That really kind of knocked me out. What was the reason for that?
Well, I think, you know, there's a part of me that's also has a very strong libertarian streak. And I think as a Republican, you know, we say we want smaller government. We want government to stop meddling in our lives. You know, when you think about people who choose to use cannabis or marijuana versus drinking, it's their choice. As long as they're not hurting people, getting behind the wheel, the libertarian part of me says, you know, what's going on here? I am a Republican. I do believe in small government and the values of fiscal conservatism. I don't, frankly, understand the hysteria over marijuana when you use marijuana separately. Talk to police officers, and when they talk to you and they say, you know, I've pulled somebody over that's has consumed an enormous amount of alcohol or any other substance, you know, they're dangerous to deal with. I would challenge you to talk to somebody who's only used marijuana and tell me if they're dangerous to deal with.
But doesn't that lead, and certainly studies have shown that leads to other things too?
Oh, I disagree. There's plenty of studies, frankly, on both sides of this issue that say things that the people who want the studies to show what they want to believe. I don't believe marijuana is a gateway drug. I believe that there's a lot of other things, really, that talk about whether somebody has an addictive personality. My father-in-law is 80 now, and he has long had some very stern eating habits. And one of the biggest ones that he always told me is that sugar is actually the most dangerous drug. And he's been telling me that for 20 years. So I think when someone's addicting, has an addictive personality, whether it's sugar, alcohol, maybe marijuana, sex, I mean, we can talk about all those things, but I think you need to start looking at marijuana on its own. People who are using marijuana, drinking a six-pack, taking illegal prescription drugs, those people have, you know, a serious issue, but it's not because of marijuana.
Boy, if they start talking about outlawing sex, then there's going to be a big revolt, I can tell you, Representative. But I digress. But that said, Is there concern if we create this mixture of marijuana and alcohol, somebody driving and drinking and smoking pot?
Well, listen, it's against the law to do so. I mean, my legislation that I introduced last session and I reintroduced already this session keeps very strict laws in place, certainly about being disabled while driving. And in fact, I also put forward legislation that would beef up marijuana infractions for young adults. I found out last year that there's actually a loophole right now in our court system where if some teenager is pulled over while driving and has, you know, whether they're caught with marijuana or the police officer believes that they've been driving while intoxicated, it's up to the court whether they actually notify DMV. And what I'm saying is I support legalization of marijuana for 21 and older, but we should be making sure people who are under 21 are seeing the full effects of the law. I propose legislation to close that loophole. Everyone, every teenager out there should listen up. If you are caught driving with this substance, you will lose your license. It will be an automatic notification to DMV. We don't even have that right now. So I think we need to be clear when we talk about legalization of marijuana, it is about 21 and older. And I am cognizant of the ramifications for our young people, and I'm trying to do what I can to beef that up as well.
Well, you know, and that would be one of the big questions. You served on the Board of Education in your town. Well, what would you tell these students about this change that marijuana would now be legalized when you reach the age of 21?
Well, what would I tell them about using marijuana before they're 21?
Well, they've been fed this message all these years, just say no. You've got the DARE program in these schools, and now all of a sudden they're being told, well, it's say no for our lifetime, but now for 21 or older, we don't have to say no.
Yeah.
Well, we already say that about alcohol. We say 18 for smoking cigarettes. Frankly, the DARE program is outdated and needs to be shelved completely. If you talk to experts in the field, for instance, I'm a member of the Connecticut Alcohol and Drug Policy Council, and obviously we're spending a lot of our time talking about opioid addiction. But when you talk to even some of those folks, you'll hear them tell you that DARE is outdated. It's not as effective as it could be. And I've told the story when my son came home from school. I quit smoking probably about 6 years ago now, but I remember when my son came home from school and he walked in the door and said, Mommy, you're going to die. And I said, what are you talking about? You know, he came home thinking that cigarettes, I was going to die immediately. We shouldn't be talking about those things and putting scare tactics as teaching our kids. I wish instead my son had come home and said, hey, you know, you have prescription drugs in your medicine cabinet. You need to lock those up. And when I go to grandma's house, I need to tell her she needs to keep her medication locked up as well. Because when you talk to people who are now addicted to heroin, most of it, and a lot of studies are showing, especially in Connecticut, it's starting with abusing prescription drugs.
Talking with State Representative Melissa Gibran. Now, Representative, you are also on the Connecticut Legislature Sportsman Caucus and the Connecticut Alcohol Drug Policy Council. In yes. other states where they are either considering legalizing marijuana for recreational purposes or where they have legalized, there becomes an issue with people who are smoking and owning firearms, in some cases having those firearms confiscated. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, that is definitely a concern, for sure. I've talked to some of my friends, especially in CCDL and some other organizations. You know, it's a concern. I worry. Right now, the way I understand it, and I probably need to do a little bit more digging on this, but the way I understand it is even if it became legal, my advice to any gun owner would be not to, because that is, you are putting your permit and your legal ability to carry a firearm at risk.
You know, I think one of the things also that bothers me with marijuana, with the drugs, but this marijuana issue, it's all about the money. I mean, let's face it. It's not because, okay, it's all right to do. It's about the money, because the money will be made for the states. But my position has always been, that's fine. That's fine. However, what about those that get hooked on it and go to another drug? That's what I'm concerned about. And evidently, it's all about the money. Is that true or isn't it true?
It's not all about the money for me. And, you know, let me just be clear, you know, marijuana is not safe. I don't want anybody to walk away with that impression. Certainly, you know, when you think about the intake of the carbon dioxide and you think about the way it affects your lungs or anything else. But no, it's not about the money for me. It is about personal freedom and liberty. One of the reasons why I stuck my head out on this issue versus my Democrat colleagues is because their proposals were so flawed, so terrible regarding the policy behind them, that I felt that it was important, if we were going to legalize and change the policy of a very important public health issue, we need to make sure we do it right. So for me, it's not about money at all. We are surrounded by states in New England that have legalized or will be legalizing. It's here already. I have to remind people of that. People act as if all of a sudden you're going to legalize marijuana and all of a sudden everyone's going to start smoking marijuana. First of all, that's not true. But we have to understand that there's a majority of people who are already doing so. And if we talk about the need of revenue, I think one of the places we should look is in this. We have people using it. We should be taxing it. But there's all other places to look as well. You know, you mentioned the things that I belong to. One of the things I'm proudest of is my position as ranking member of the Appropriations Committee for the House Republican Caucus. I've worked hand in hand with leadership developing 10 budgets last year. You know, I am a fiscal conservative. We have to understand that we need to find ways to, you know, certainly look at balancing our books. There's many other places we can talk about besides revenue from marijuana, but let's be realistic about what's happening around us.
Okay, Representative Hangin, a lot to talk about, and she's been kind enough, Brad, to spend the hour with us. You can also watch the interview on Facebook. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/talkofct.
And at 7:53, a very special guest, State Representative Melissa Gibran, 34th District, and she is a conservative. She's a Republican, and she really knows and believes in what she is talking about, and this is one of the reasons that we have her with us this morning.
Representative, do you think in this short session that there'll be a big push to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes?
Well, I don't know about a big push. I did refile my legislation to legalize marijuana. Remember, in a short session, if it has a budgetary impact, it could be potentially a standalone bill. I've also sent my legislation in a letter to key committees of cognizance, general law, public health, and asked them to raise it. But I'll be honest with you, Representative Elliott's actions are causing problems underneath the dome at the Capitol. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to speak with people, especially my friends on the Republican side of the aisle, to talk about the real issues and the small government, those kinds of issues related to legalization. But comments being made by the advocates on the other side of the aisle are becoming a little personal, a little nasty, and that's going to have, it already is having a chilling effect when I'm talking about legalization. And I really hope state representatives understand that, you know, I saw a quote, you know, I'm not here to make friends. Well, that may be true, but you have to be cordial and develop working relationships. And if you're just crashing and burning people who have been in a position of authority or power underneath that building for the sake of your political purposes, you're never going to get legislation passed. So I'm very concerned about that.
Are you talking about Representative Elliott in particular?
I think his actions clearly have been well documented and publicized. They're not helpful, bottom line, and I've told him that directly. It's not something he hasn't already heard from me. He's doubled down on those efforts, and it's really going to hurt our chances. But I'm still working. I've introduced my legislation. I'm going to do what I can.
Interesting. For folks who don't know what he has contributed, could you just refresh their memories?
Well, I mean, it's not just that. I mean, it's you know, he's targeting, you know, he's getting involved in races now. Here we are in February. He's getting involved and purposely recruiting candidates. And I'm not going to share some of the things I know on air, but I'll just say the things that have been publicized are very accurate. You know, when you're targeting people in your own caucus who you feel don't meet a progressive standard, there's a lot of conservative Democrats or maybe, you know, moderate Democrats, I don't know what the term is, that are being targeted now that have primaries against them. And that may feel good because you think you are pushing some progressive movement. But when you're trying to get legislation done with those very same people, you learn, I think he's going to learn very quickly what the unintended consequences are going to be. And I now have a bigger mountain to push because of it.
So are you saying that your effort, and you've been very above board about this, and you're certainly educating our audience today on how you approach this legalization of marijuana, are you saying that his approach is serving as a turnoff to those perhaps you are trying to persuade to have marijuana legalized?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. That's the answer.
Yeah. Now, and Representative Gibran is going to be with us between 10 after 8 and 8:32. There's a lot of conversation. We're seeing it, for example, the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, might rule in June that it's legal for any state to permit betting on sporting events, baseball, football, basketball, your Red Sox, my Yankees, etc. There's also the conversation, not only conversation, it's already legalized in Pennsylvania, where you can bet, play the lottery, play the slots from your tablet, from your smartphone. In Pennsylvania, by the spring, you're going to be able to download an app and play the lottery on your phone. Do you foresee Connecticut entering those areas, Representative?
Well, I think as far as entering those areas of a discussion, I think yes. There's a large group of legislators who have been pushing, as I'm sure you know, casinos in Bridgeport or different kind of betting in some of our urban areas. And frankly, you know, when we talk about things that are addictive, you know, gambling is definitely in the top five of those things. I'm not sure how that's going to enter the debate. I'm sure there's going to be legislators bringing that forward, specifically in the Bridgeport area. That would be my guess.
You know, I made the statement, this was last week, if it gets like that, can you imagine at home, can you imagine what this is going to do as far as our society is concerned overall in the long run?
Well, I mean, I just was scrolling through my own Twitter feed, and, you know, there's yet another bookkeeper being charged with embezzling money because of a gambling habit, or, you know, there's many documented cases. You talk to the business community, they have, you know, special training to detect this. So it is going to be a problem. You know, I have to say there are some lately when I think about how our kids are being exposed.
Representative, hold that thought. We're coming up on news. Go grab a cup of coffee. We'll be back in about 7 or 8 minutes, okay?
You got it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Very special guest today, Daniel, and we're getting into some things that are going to affect all of us. One way or the other.
Talking with State Representative Melissa Gibran of the 34th District, third-term Republican. The 34th District includes East Haddam, East Hampton, and part of Colchester. Representative, as we went to the top of the order, we were talking about the message being delivered to our kids. We were talking about perhaps gambling, the gaming industry expanding in Connecticut. So please finish your thought.
Well, my only thought was, I think, you know, the invention of a cell phone, while it's certainly, you know, great, I do a lot of work from it, kind of breaks my heart when I see little kids using it while they're at the beach, which happened just the other week when I was on vacation. I think there is a change of society, to Brad's point, and I am very concerned. So you talk about all those things, those apps and technology, I think, you know, parents are needed more than ever.
What about tolls? The legislature, we're hearing a lot of conversation, is going to be bringing up the tolls issue again. The Speaker of the House has even said he'll call for a vote. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I have to chuckle. He says he's calling for a vote. Well, that is exactly what they did last time, and then they used that technical procedure called a pass temporarily, or PT. You know, it's you can't say, I'm going to call for a vote and behind closed doors orchestrate an agreement to talk for an hour and pull the bill so nobody's voting on anything. So I'll believe it when I see it. I do think, though, we should be having that conversation, but it needs to be an actual plan, not putting in a transportation authority board that actually has the power to raise revenue without legislative approval, and that is what was a lot of what was debated last session.
I mean, the Transportation Authority, and I know Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff is for that, really concerns me, because you're giving them the power, like you said, without legislative approval, and you know this, but maybe our audience doesn't, not only to add tolls, raise the gasoline gas tax, perhaps implement a tax by the mile. It gives them almost unbelievable power, Representative.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe, I cannot believe that this could happen, and I would assume that folks like yourself would fight it tooth and nail, because this would be one of the worst things to happen. We've got enough problems here in Connecticut now, and these problems have been created over the years because nobody had the guts enough to stand up. And this I see this as something that is going to absolutely continue the downward spiraling for this state.
Yeah, I think people need to understand when, you know, am I totally opposed to the idea of tolls? No, I'm not. But when you say, do you support tolls, it's much different than saying, do you support independent transportation authority to be able to raise revenue and install tolls anywhere they want without legislative approval? Those are two different things, and I think the average citizen, not blaming them, because, you know, the devil's in the details, and when you're only skimming a paper or even the newspaper, they're not really reporting on it as they should be. It has been done before, and I think New York State is the example many people point to. But, you know, I think we need to be looking at other things. You know, we have a lot of very high-mileage cars on the road, and yet they're not paying their fair share when you talk about gas tax. I don't always agree with the voices of children. They have a budgetary report they put out. They talk about tax-exempt items. And I think we need to go back and look at that before we start talking about new taxes.
I mean, Representative, we had the president of the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut on the program yesterday, and they're opposed to tolls. His concern is the state subsidizes a lot of mass transit, including many of these buses that are empty a lot of the times. Now, that might be anecdotal evidence, but if it wasn't, why does the Republican leadership, such as Senator Fasano, have a difficult time getting figures to show that, in fact, mass transit is properly being subsidized? So that's their concern.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and again, you have a governor who basically is ignoring the will of the legislature. And the classic example of that is that we, in the last budget, removed the money to expand the, CT fast track to UConn. We removed that out of the budget, and yet it was implemented, and that is happening now. So I think Senator Frisano, when he talks about prioritized progress, the Republicans' plan, you know, he worked extremely hard on that. I think this governor hasn't prioritized the spending as we would have in our plan, and I can tell you we certainly wouldn't have been expanding 24-hour bus service to stores.
Well, and I think that's the issue, that before we have the conversation about tolls, there needs to be a discussion as to where's the money going for transportation? Where's the money going from the gas tax? Where's the money going from the when we tax the oil coming into New Haven Harbor supposedly for transportation? Where's the money from the federal government going on transportation?
And how come we can't find out?
Well, I'm going to point your listeners to a great resource, which is the Yankee Institute just put out a pretty eye-opening study that shows that Connecticut pays the most per mile for infrastructure. It's outrageous what we're paying compared to other states in this country. And I think to your point, where's the current money going? Why are we spending, you know, 10 times the amount that other states are? It was quite shocking when I was looking at it, but it really comes about prioritizing. I mean, we had to spend, I think, 3 years ago when I was first on APROPS, we, you know, invested all kinds of money into special snow plows for the busway. We increased the amount of salt we're putting on roads, which frankly has a very negative impact on the environment, never mind to the infrastructure of, you know, brake lines and bridges and everything else. So I think we need to have these kinds of conversations, but then implement a recommendation.
Well, who are these people, though? This is the problem that drives you crazy. Who are these people? And it happens, and the people as a whole that live in this state don't want some of this stuff.
Well, it's done through the executive branch and through, you know, directives from the commissioner, and that's, you know, that's what's happening.
I want to talk about some gun control in just a bit, Brad. Representative Gibran will be with us until the bottom of the hour. Back to Representative Gibran and our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. Representative, as I mentioned earlier, you serve on the legislature's Sportsman Caucus. The governor is out there proposing that bump stocks now be eliminated. Where do you stand on this as far as more gun control passing through the legislature in this session?
Well, I don't know how useful that is going to be with our short session time when we're facing a $260 million budget deficit this year and $280 next year. We're going to have that conversation. I don't serve on the public safety committee that will hear it, but I will tell you I am, you know, I'll continue to protect legal, law-abiding gun owners. I think I want to make sure that they're part of that conversation. They've been shut out in the past, and I don't want to see that continue.
That is one of our big situations here in the state of Connecticut. You know, one of the frustrating things to folks that I talk with, and I talk with a lot of people out in the field, is they can't understand why Connecticut, compared to some of the other states, spends so much money, and they never say no. I had a woman say that to me the other day. Why don't they ever say no? What is your answer to that?
Why doesn't who say no? I'm sorry, Brad, I'm not following you.
No, why don't they say no to some of these things that the governor wants and that some of the liberals want as far as spending goes?
Because
it's spend.
Listen, I think that's what we desperately need in the Capitol, with whether it's a Democrat or Republican. I think saying no and prioritizing what we do is so critically important, and I think we need more of that. I have never seen it so partisan and nasty as I have over this last year. I think people are continuing to surround themselves with people who believe in exactly what they believe in. And so when they try to talk to people with an opposing viewpoint, it becomes an argument. You're not listening to listen, you're listening to respond. and it's worse than ever up at the Capitol.
How much of that has to do with outside money coming in, actually from out of state into Connecticut, into some of these campaigns?
Oh, I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does on both sides. And then you have a ton of nonprofits who are becoming more and more politically mobilized as well. And so that's another reason, you know, you want to talk about prioritizing taxpayer spending. When you have all this money coming in, show me how our citizens' election program is, in fact, keeping our elections clean. They're not. And so, you know, my Democrat colleagues want to prioritize spending $25 to $30 million on political mailers. You know, we'd like to prioritize spending that money in different ways. And I think, you know, we need to have those conversations without being accused of trying to be dark and shady. But that's what, unfortunately, the very partisan colleagues on the other side of the aisle do. It's a sound point. It's a sound bite. It's a quick headline and a way for them to capitalize and get money for their own campaigns.
How much, again, did you say is spent?
Well, typically the budget that we have is about $24 million, but the problem is with all these candidates who are vying for all these races, now the taxpayer is going to be on the hook for the primary too. So it could really explode, and the law was written so that, you know, the check when it comes due, it will be paid. So something is going to be sacrificed this upcoming year in the budget somewhere to pay for these crazy amount of candidates and their political campaigns. And it's the program that's been passed and put before us. But we need to make changes to that. And my friends on the other side of the aisle continue to push back on that. I mean, get this. We pay money for people who are unopposed. An unopposed state rep candidate can actually get $11,000 of taxpayer money so that they can send out pretty pictures of themselves.
Wow.
Get real.
Can they redirect some of that money if, for example, they're running unopposed or they're a lock to win to another candidate?
No, they can't. They can't do that. So, like, last year, I was unopposed, my third race, and I didn't take the money. I just spent what I raised, which was based on $100 maximum donations, and I spent what I raised. But you can't transfer that money. And then I unenrolled out of CEP, and the speaker, not the speaker, the majority leader promised me they would deal with the unopposed issue of CEP, and then did not. It's still, people can still take that money, and it's wrong.
Matt Ritter promised you that?
Yeah, on the floor of the House, there was a speech made where I was going to appreciate their plan to take away that money. At the end of the day, it never happened.
You know, again, this is exactly what is happening in Connecticut, and this is the first time on our program here, Dan and myself, that somebody has explained it the way you have.
Yeah. Representative, a couple more questions before we wrap it up. You know the legislation that's being filed or refiled, like in your case, you refiled your measure on legalizing marijuana. What do you hear? What else is being filed that, for example, has you concerned?
I haven't been through that. I'll probably be looking through those things, but you know, I think there's going to be a lot of unfinished business. My concern is, you know, we need to focus on the budget. I'm not sure what else is coming. You know, maybe we'll see. You know, I think some things are a waste of time, and that's maybe not politically correct to say so, but, you know, when we're looking at some environmental bills like, you know, banning ivory, you know, and gets every single antiquarian and historical society to the Capitol for three nights. Those are the kinds of things that we should not be debating in a short session. But listen, it's up to the committee. If the chair of a committee wants to raise a bill, that's their prerogative, and that's what we'll be debating. Can I just ask one favor? When you have the DCP commissioner on next, why don't you ask her where the cottage food law is? I passed that. It was signed into law 3 years ago, and they still haven't written regulations for it. And that is a great way to start new businesses.
Okay. Give us a quick overview of the cottage food law.
So the cottage food law allows folks to produce non-hazardous food at home in their own kitchen. So you have a lot of people who want to bake cupcakes or make jelly and jam. pickles, bringing them to the farmer's market to create some income for themselves. And it's a way, a great way to start a small new business owner to kind of test their skills. It was signed into law and passed. They were supposed to write regulations. That was over 2.5 years ago, and those regulations still haven't been written between DCP and the Department of Public Health. And I have tons of, whether they're stay-at-home moms or people who have lost a job that would love to be able to become an entrepreneur that can't because of this law not being implemented.
Why haven't they done it?
Well, they don't want to do it, I think. I think that, you know, they claim, you know, if you have a dog in the house, you could, you know, get a hair in it and somebody could die. I don't know what the reason is.
We'll find out.
I'd love to hear what her response is.
Yeah, well, we sure will ask that question, certainly. Representative, before we wrap up our interview, anything else you would like to add?
No, I just think that it's important for your listeners to make sure that they're getting latest information and not be afraid to challenge their state rep to actually put things into motion and implement some of these common sense ideals, and they need to be involved. Don't think just because you sent an email and got a nice response, that doesn't mean you can't call them again. We need citizen action, especially on fiscally conservative issues.
Now, the most important question before we wrap it up, because I'm a Yankee fan, Brad is a Yankee fan, I've read where you and your family, they're Red Sox fans. Who's going to win the East? I mean, my Yankees have gotten better, Representative.
I hear you. I can't help it. I'll always be a Red Sox fan. I'll always be rooting for my team. Sorry.
Well, thanks a million.
We'll talk again soon.
Look forward to it.
You bet. Take care.